From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 243, recorded live Tuesday, November 30th, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Steve Sanderson about his MVVM JavaScript library, Knockout.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today I'm on campus at the Microsoft Redmond. And I'm here today with Steven Sanderson, new Microsoft employee.
That's right. Hello, Scott. How are you?
How are you doing, sir?
I am doing fine, thank you.
Brilliant. So you've gone from being a consultant to working for the man.
That's right. Yep. I just started at the beginning of last week, and I am still trying to figure out what's going on and why I'm here.
Pretty dramatic. You got off the plane yesterday.
Yes, that's right.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you today, just kind of coincidentally, since we're both on the left side of the pond, is I think that there's this great open source project that more people should know about. It's called Knockout.js. And you can see it at knockoutjs.com. Talk to me about what is Knockout?
Okay, well, yeah, great. So this is a project that I started about, I don't know, 6 months ago or something like that. It came out of some experiences that I've had over the last few years trying to build dynamic JavaScript applications and trying to find ways of simplifying that and organizing the code so that it's not just a big, massive bundle of mess. I've probably done about three different versions of my own brand of JavaScript client-side library over the years, and this is kind of the latest incarnation of all that. So the idea is that we are increasingly building very rich web pages with lots of JavaScript on. That's very much accepted as the way web development should be these days. And in terms of creating rich client-side experiences, it's all about JavaScript. So we're not really doing too much in terms of browser plugins. If you want to make your application run on iOS and on Android tablets and on Windows PCs and on everything, then, you know, it's got to be JavaScript, obviously. But that's still a big challenge. So what I've done with Knockout is tried to create a system of following the model view model pattern to enable you to create your application in quite a maintainable and simple way.
So this is really interesting because we had Laurent Bunyan, who was a Silverlight developer, on last week or the week before last, talking about MVVM.
Okay.
And here we are talking to you now. I'm a web developer. You're a web developer. We are now peers on the Microsoft Web Platform team. You have written a book on ASP.NET MVC,
yes,
as have I. So why are two MVC developers talking about MVVM, which is something that we talked about with a Silverlight guy?
Well, MVVM differs from MVC in that it's trying to solve a slightly different problem. MVVM is really good for interactive user interfaces where there's some kind of state inherent in the system, whereas Model View Controller, I'm not talking about the original definition Model View Controller, that's kind of very similar to what we mean when we say MVVM today, but forget about that. If we understand MVC to mean the thing that ASP.NET MVC does and Ruby on Rails does and things like that do, that's really all optimized around requests and responses and statelessness and such like. Whereas the MVVM pattern, which was originally talked about at Microsoft when they were doing Silverlight or WPF or some technology prior to that, is about formalizing a abstract definition of a model of what's happening in a user interface. So if you've got a list and some buttons and some drop-down menus, then you might have a class that represents the state of each of those things. But they're not controls. It's just an abstract class. And then that gives you a very clean, abstract way of manipulating the state of your user interface without being tied to a certain UI technology, and then letting the technology do the hard work of actually binding that up with some stuff that happens on screen, and the developer doesn't have to worry too much about that.
Okay, so let me see if I can put this into terms that I understand, and you tell me if I'm paraphrasing correctly back to you. We'll use an example on the homepage here of knockoutjs.com. If I've got a ticketing system,
yep.
Certainly I have a tickets database, or Lord knows what's going on in the database, what we traditionally think of as the entity relationship diagram.
Yep.
I may have a model that sits on top of that database that may be a little bit less normalized and a little more businessy.
Yep.
Tickets.
And this is on your server usually?
On my server. And then at some point we come all the way out to the we're using model view controller, and we have a controller that talks to the model and it generates a view. And now we're over on the client side. On the client, I may have a JavaScript model, but in this case, I'm in the view. So that's really a view model. It's a model of what's being expressed. It may also be called tickets.
Yep.
But it may have things like the name of the ticket, the price of the ticket, maybe also things like is the ticket valid, or the ticket number, or the state of the ticket.
Yeah, and it's likely to be very denormalized. So it might have things like the price if it's discounted for a gold member, and the price if it's discounted for a silver member, and so on. You wouldn't store all these things separately in a database. That would be mad. But in terms of the way that your view works, they might be all treated as if they were separate pieces of information, even though behind the scenes they're all computed from some underlying thing.
Right. So stated differently, work may have occurred on the server side to tell me the price of a ticket for a first class person or an economy person.
Yep.
But by the time I got out to the model as it is expressed within the view, literally the JSON that is emitted.
Yep.
That work has been done.
Yeah, that's right. And you don't want to repeat that logic on the client. So you're just going to treat it in some really simple way. This is just a bunch of properties and we want to get that on screen somehow. And mm-hmm. So the view model is just a representation of the data that is there to be put on screen and edited by the user.
And this idea of I've been saying this for almost 15 years. When we were doing big systems in classic ASP, we always used to talk about the closer you get to the user, the less normalized your data should look.
Yep.
And the more it should look like the way the user thinks about it.
Yeah.
So the JSON that you have here, which is in JSON, we're talking about JavaScript object notation, JSON, pronounced JSON, looks like a little UI. It's very well organized. It's a nice tabular expression of a list. It's as close as you could get. You could almost kind of squint and imagine it's a table.
Yeah, very
it's
much so.
Extremely UI focused.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
A ticket on the UI is not a ticket in the model in the middle, and it is not a ticket in the database.
No, that's right. It's just a representation of something that the user can see.
So you're saying that instead of outputting my UI that contains its data, what do? I output my data, my view data, my representation of tickets, and then how do I turn that into HTML, and how does that work?
Yeah, all right. So that's the thing that Knockout does. So all we talked about so far with the model view model pattern and view models, that's all just almost a philosophical thing about the pattern. Now Knockout comes in and says, assuming that you've got some concept of what your view model should be, we want to get that on screen and give the user a way of seeing and interacting with it. Mm-hmm. And the approach that Knockout takes with that is that it has a declarative binding syntax. So it uses the new HTML5 data attributes, and you can just put one of those on any HTML element and reference it, follow a particular simple declarative syntax and reference some product properties on your view model, which is a JavaScript object. Mm-hmm. And then Knockout deals with linking the two things together. So if you say bind the text of this element to this property, then whatever value is in that property will be the text of that element. And when the property value changes in your model, the text on the HTML element changes. And if it's an editable element, let's say it's a drop-down list or a checkbox, then when the user interacts with that, they're actually going to be modifying the state on the view model. So you've linked these two things together. So that's just one of the things that Knockout does. It's linking your view model with your HTML DOM.
So if I understand, then I bring some JSON out that represents tickets.
Yep.
Then a bunch of work is done in HTML that I don't really have to think about. Then that same exact array of tickets gets updated.
It's being updated on the client, yes. We're not talking to the server at all. Knockout
right.
is a purely client-side technology.
So we're talking about a relationship that's happening, a little kind of circle of interaction between the browser, the JavaScript in the browser, and the user. But the point is that I outputted some JSON, the user did some stuff, and it's not that, and then the user pushed a button and the data got updated. the data was always updated. It is not even a sync. It's a live sync. It's happening as it happens.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. A modification to one is a modification to the other.
And then I can take that JSON and send it right back to the server.
Yeah. So one way of thinking about what knockout is that it's a very, rich and simultaneously simple way of making editors for JSON data. If you can get some JSON from your server, then we can make an HTML editor for it with a very straightforward syntax. And then you can send that JSON back to your server.
That's interesting because one of the things that I have always found the most tedious about HTML and JavaScript is what we call text boxes over data, right? Mm-hmm. It's that just tedious terminal type application. I mean, that's just why you always see interesting examples when, you know, your local Microsoft guy goes up and does a demo. They always output a table of data. It's always more impressive when they edit that data.
Yep.
Because that's where things get tricky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because of synchronization of state and moving things around. So you're saying that the MVVM is happening entirely on the client side.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Entirely in the browser. So MVC as a larger architectural pattern is showing the relationship between the client and the server and what's going on the server side. And then MVVM inside my browser itself.
Yeah, MVC is really good for requests and responses, and that fits perfectly with HTTP and the whole server-side web architecture. And MVVM is more of a kind of live, ongoing, stateful thing, and that works great for some JavaScript that's running in your browser.
Mm-hmm. Let's do this. Let's take a very brief kind of side conversation, because in the middle there you said HTML5 data attributes.
Yeah.
I think that's something interesting there, because one, I think that HTML5 is just becoming like, it's like the new name, like Web 2.0, right?
Yeah.
In the old days, you'd say, in the old days, like yeah, 2 years ago, you'd say Web 2.0, and ooh, shiny.
Yeah, then it was Ajax.
Right, let me buy your startup and give you money.
Yeah.
Now HTML5 is like the word that everyone uses to mean all things, and it's amazing. While there is a formal standard that is slowly making its way through the process, these data attributes that you're describing, I can pretty much slap those on existing pages.
Yeah, and knockout works back to IE6. Which obviously does not have any concept of HTML5 of its own. But yeah, as long as you're willing to accept the fact that data attributes are not strictly valid under an HTML4 validator, then it's just going to work fine. I mean, pragmatically, it works. Now, whether you have a philosophical problem with doing something that works but doesn't satisfy the W3C validator is a different question. And if you absolutely can't accept that, then yeah, you can't use knockout, or you wouldn't use it in the way it's intended to be used. But honestly, in all the different projects I've ever worked on as a professional developer, I've never had a boss or client yet who was actually so committed to W3C validators that they would actually accept a significant increase in development costs.
Mm-hmm.
And if knockout does reduce your development costs significantly for rich client-side stuff, then I think that pragmatically that's a good choice. But of course, every person listening to this needs to make their own decision about that.
So these data attributes that are always referred to as HTML5 data attributes, this is really, I mean, HTML5 be damned.
Yeah.
I could just go and say, angle bracket input foo equals bar.
Yeah, you can.
And no one cares.
No, the browser is absolutely fine with that. There's a formal mechanism that IE uses for registering custom attributes, and other browsers are just not bothered. They'll just let you do it. And, mm-hmm. Well, IE will just let you do it as well, but, you know, there is some system. I'm not sure even what the point of following its system is for talking about custom attributes.
Mm-hmm. But these data attributes, it's more convention than anything. I mean, someone somewhere just decided one day, if you put the word data and a hyphen.
Yeah.
Ahead of that's an official thing, and
yep.
That became an official thing.
Yeah, exactly. Because what web developers have realized over the years, and what every web developer has done at different times, is just start putting data into the DOM because you really need to, because you want to store a URL that you're going to use for something associated with that element, or you want to associate it with an ID of an entity, but you don't want to actually munch that into the element ID for some reason, or one reason or another, you want to get some data associated with your DOM. So you just stick it in an attribute and it's going to work fine. And the HTML5 spec is just formalizing that and saying, yes, we officially agree that that's legitimate. Whereas previously the strict validator would not have said it was legitimate.
So you add data-bind.
Yep.
Is that the only one that you add?
Yeah. That's right.
Did you have to ask permission or register that somewhere, like a domain, or you just decided to squat on it?
Well, no, there is no formal system or namespacing or versioning or anything about these attributes. That's kind of the point of it all. It's just, you know, we're going to just be pragmatic and do what works. Now, if some other framework comes along and wants to use data bind as its convention, then that's going to be an unfortunate clash. And it would be very easy to extend knockout so that you could use some other custom attribute name if you wanted, but I'm not aware of any reason to do that right now. So no, there's no system for agreeing who uses what attribute names.
Now, isn't just the term data binding itself got such a bad name from years past that may be enough to scare people away?
I don't know, really. I think that certainly there are some technologies that are oriented around data binding that, you know, maybe are not very popular with the sort of alpha developers. But really, binding your data to the user interface is a really natural concept, and developers always want to do it, whether or not they use that particular term for it. And, you know, people will be searching the web, how do I bind this to that? And it's just a normal kind of thing that we have to do.
Perhaps it was the idea that maybe it was that MVVM wasn't quite baked as a concept in the VB6 days, and that people were literally trying to bind data objects from directly from tables directly to the UI.
Right, yeah. If you don't have a nice system of formalizing what you're doing and are not following any kind of established pattern, then yeah, I'm sure you can get into a mess.
Okay, so walk me through what I would need to do in Knockout if I'm bringing back, we'll use tickets because this has been a good example that people can actually see live. So if you're listening to this in front of a computer, you can go to knockoutjs.com and check it out. These tickets come back presumably from a JSON call or an AJAX call.
Yep.
And I've got this JSON array.
Yeah, and you want to make an editor for that in some way. So you want to let the user choose it from a ticket and then show more information about the ticket that they've chosen, or even it's a system for administrators to find tickets and edit their details, and you know, the system is going to maybe compute discounts that apply in those tickets or something like that.
Mm-hmm. But very briefly, maybe for people who may not necessarily be familiar with JSON as a concept.
Okay.
JSON is some text that comes back that is in itself JavaScript.
Yeah, that's right. It's just a very simple and, what's the word, succinct kind of encoding mechanism for data. So yeah, you could use XML, but JSON is just smaller over the wire because it doesn't have, you know, big closing angle bracket names and things like that. And because it's actually JavaScript code, as you mentioned, then it works really great with JavaScript because the browser's native JavaScript processor can handle that really quickly.
So it's kind of like a dynamically created bunch of anonymous objects that just hang off each other. So it's almost like with XML, you bring over these angle brackets, you parse it into a DOM, while JSON is itself, as it runs, it is its own DOM, its own document object model.
Yeah, it is a JavaScript object. It's just the serialized text representation of a JavaScript object. And it can represent any data that you want, with the exception that, like XML, it's inherently a hierarchical structure. So it can't easily represent cyclical references, or you'd have to have your own convention for IDs or something if you wanted to represent that. But in most cases, a hierarchy of data is completely sufficient for what most people are doing.
Hi, this is Scott coming to you from another place in time. Are you using agile practices to manage your software development? There's lots of tools in the market that manage the steps of a project, but most of them focus on individual roles. Get ready for a solution that caters for the success of the whole team. The guys at Telerik introduced TeamPulse. It's an agile project management tool that'll help you gather ideas, estimate, plan, track progress in a common workspace. Finally, companies, regardless of their size, can use a lightweight and convenient tool that makes all the stakeholders work as a united team, even if they're in different countries. By combining intuitive user interface and the power of Silverlight, TeamPulse removes the roadblocks that you typically face in applying Agile in an effective manner. No more lost data, no disparate systems, no lack of critical analytics regarding the health and velocity of your project. See for yourself, get a free copy for 5 users and 1 project at Telerik.com/TeamPulse. And please do thank Telerik for supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TELERIK, Telerik. We do appreciate it. There wouldn't be a Hansel Minutes if there wasn't Telerik helping us. So at its simplest, I could have a little web service, and I'm using web service in the most generic lowercase sense of the word, that returns curly brace name colon Scott curly brace, and I've got some JSON.
Yep, exactly.
And then there's a format for encoding arrays. So in the example here, we have an array of of airplane tickets that's come back from some database somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. Almost every modern web development system on the server is going to be able to emit JSON. In ASP.NET MVC, you can just say return JSON. In Rails, you can respond to a request of type JSON. And, well, I'm not really an expert in many others, but they're all going to have one way or another of emitting JSON. Mm-hmm. And I should expect that most of them are able to consume incoming JSON as well. That's a native feature in ASP.NET MVC 3. It isn't native in the earlier ones, but you can do it mm-hmm. in just a few lines of code. And I was doing some knockout stuff in Ruby on Rails a few weeks ago, and that's really easy to receive incoming JSON because that's all just completely native.
Okay. So once this JSON is now in memory in my browser, like you said, as far back as IE6, that's all still just JavaScript and jQuery, right?
There's no jQuery.
No jQuery
in this,
there at all.
No, it's just JavaScript. Yep.
Okay. So now I have this JavaScript object, this JSON notation that represents a ticket.
Yep.
How does knockout get in? Does it add something to that or extend it in some way?
Well, it's up to you to add that as a property of some JavaScript object. So you're going to write some JavaScript code that is your client-side view model. So you'll say var view model equals, and then you'll do curly brace and you'll start typing out some properties that you want on your view model. So you might have an array of tickets called available tickets, and that might be the thing that just came from your server. You might have another property called selected ticket or something, mm-hmm. and that represents what the user's got selected. You might have another property which is sort of final value including discount or something, and that's going to be computed from some other properties. But yeah, you're going to construct some JavaScript that represents that view model, and then you can write whatever behaviors you want into that to control what selections are legitimate, what kind of data entry is valid, and how different properties are computed from each other, just in plain JavaScript code. And that's the essence of why the pattern is clean, because all your behavioral logic there is just in terms of an abstract model, and it isn't touching any HTML DOM elements. It's not doing jQuery selectors or anything that sort of mixes different technologies. It's just JavaScript.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm seeing this ko.observable function in your example, and that appears just by looking at this to be the only function that is used in your example on your homepage here.
Yeah, so...
And apply bindings, I guess, is one other.
Knockout does a few different things. If I list the kind of major headline features of Knockout, then I can explain how ko.observable fits into that and what the point of that is. As I've talked about at length already, it's following the MVVM pattern. In order to give you a sort of nice structure for all your client-side behavior. And as I mentioned, it's got a system of declarative bindings that happen to be the HTML5 data bind attribute. But if you're not working in HTML5, you just think of it as another attribute. It doesn't really matter. Another one of the key things that it deals with is dependency tracking. So as you're defining a view model, you can have properties on that view model that whose values are computed in terms of the other properties. And Knockout notices when you're doing that and automatically wires up internally all the subscriptions between those things. So you as a developer don't have to ever declare that such and such a thing depends on something else. Just by simply referencing one property from inside another property, the dependency is set up implicitly for you. So you can have like a total price on your view model that's computed in terms of a quantity and a discount level and so on. And Knockout deals with tracking the dependencies so that as each property updates, any other property that depends on that gets updated. And as a very satisfying special case of this dependency tracking, the UI is just one more dependency. So as you modify properties on your view model, because your UI, your HTML DOM, happens to be just one more of these dependencies, Knockout will implicitly update that DOM. So if you've got a binding that says the text of this span is the total price, then because somebody edits a quantity, that will cause the total price to be updated because that's a dependency of quantity. And then Knockout will also notice that that span element is a dependency on total price. So the span element would be updated. So by updating quantity in the view model, the total price span gets updated automatically.
Now, that kind of interaction is traditionally what gets people in trouble because they end up building themselves a little state machine and they have to declare where the authoritative source of the data is.
Well, okay. So this is what the ko.observable thing is all about. The idea is that you can express your view model in terms of a certain number of independent underlying properties that are the sort of raw underlying data. So if we continue with this whole thing about quantities and total prices and so on, total price is not an underlying piece of data. So whereas quantity is, that can update independently of anything else. And so anything that's an independent piece of data is ko.observable, and other things can be declared as a dependent observable, which are computed in terms of those. And you can have whole chains of dependencies, but at the root of it all, some things are the independent authoritative pieces of information, and they're the only ones that you can directly modify. Everything mm-hmm. else is computed from those.
So I can hook up input text boxes. I can hook up selects like combo yep. boxes. What about funky custom controls like calendar controls and things that are weird?
Yeah, all right. So the model for dealing with something like that is that you can create custom bindings. So Knockout has a load of built-in bindings. I'm using the word bindings, which I'm not sure that's a great choice because it's very well overloaded term that every framework uses that word to mean a different thing. But in Knockout, the bindings refers to the bits of text that you can put declaratively on a DOM element in order to link it with your view model. So you could say, data bind text to this property, data bind click to some handler that occurs when you click, data bind visible to some other property, and that controls whether the element's visible or not, according to whether a property is true or false. So the in these cases, click and visible and so on, they're the bindings. You can create a custom binding. And so with the calendar example, in just a few lines of code, assuming that your calendar has a nice API, you could create a custom binding called calendar date for it, let's say. And then on your DOM element, you can say calendar date, colon, give the name of some property, which is a date. Mm-hmm. And then whenever your property value changes, it will call your custom binding, which can in turn call the API on your calendar element to set the new value on your calendar.
I
and
see.
You can do the reverse as well.
So it's just a little adapter that says, hey, Knockout's telling me something's changed, and I know where to put it because I know how to call this such and such a
Yeah, and the widget. Inverse as well. So when your calendar raises an event to say the user just changed the date, then again, that's going to call your binding, and your binding will do the reverse of pushing the new data into the view model. So it's two-way.
And once I've done that, I never think about it again.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's all done in a declarative way.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So I can bring JSON back from the server. I can mark up with these data elements my HTML input things as well as my custom controls.
Yep.
But if I bring back a big list of stuff, the list of tickets,
yep.
how do I get that out onto the screen? How do I make angle brackets HTML out of
all
that?
Right. So that's good that you mentioned that, because that's the sort of fourth major feature of Knockout, which is dealing with templating. When you want to display stuff on screen, you can just directly use a binding on an element to say, make the text of this element equal this property. And that's really convenient in some cases. But in other cases, you want to emit loads of HTML, not just, a single property on a single element. And in that case, you can use templates. And for example, you can just start typing out some HTML that's just normal HTML. You put that inside a script block with an ID, which is the name of the template that you want to use. And then somewhere else, you link an element to that template by using the binding called template. So you create a div, let's say, and you say template and give the name of the template. And so Knockout will then invoke your template, get the HTML that comes out of that, and stuff it into the div that you've just bound it to. And in the case of a list, you could, for one thing, in your template, you could have a for each loop. So you could generate repeating blocks of HTML from inside your template if you wanted to. Knockout supports, it has a pluggable system for template engines. In theory, but in practice, the only one that people are really using is the jQuery template engine. And that allows you to do simple control flow statements like if else and for loops. Mm-hmm. So you can generate repeating blocks of HTML that way if you want to. And that's quite nice. And then whenever something in your model changes, the template would be re-rendered and the whole thing would be updated. And then there's a second option you can use. There's a special binding called for each, and that renders your template multiple times, once for each item in an array. And so you might think that's just equivalent to putting a for each loop inside the template, and it kind of is, but it's got a performance benefit, which is that when one of the things inside your array changes, Knockout is smart enough to just update that, just re-render the template for that one thing and insert it at the right point in your DOM. And doesn't have to, you know, run the template again for every single thing in the array.
So I'm looking through your documentation and I see this simple grid.
Yeah.
Is that an example of that?
Yep. Simple grid, I don't know if that one particularly works that way. It probably does.
But I mean, it's like I want a table of stuff and I want it to be as easy as possible.
Yeah.
I could go and do all the table and the TR and the TD and all that kind of stuff. But in this case, you're going to do it for me.
Yeah. So the simple grid is an example of how you could create a plugin on top of Knockout. And so in this case, I've created a grid plugin that allows you to just take an array and say, render this array of JavaScript data into a grid-like structure, and you say the names of the columns and the number of items you want on each page, and it will just give you a grid. And it's quite simple. But you could use that as a starting point to extend and customize the templates for each row if you wanted, or, you know, give it all kinds of fancy features like sorting and such like.
So in that example, in the simple grid example, it's a plugin that's really very encapsulated and I don't see much markup.
Yeah.
And in the templating example like you gave, where you could put like a for each or an each tag around it using a templating language, I have a lot more control, but it's a little less reusable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. And one of the things that I noticed when I was looking at this, there's this little example where you've got a first name and a text box and a last name and a text box.
Yeah.
And as you start typing and you tab away, you then update a span where you say, you know, hello world, you know, like first name Scott, last name Hanselman, hello Scott Hanselman.
Yeah.
What if I'm putting evil things in there in script and JSON and I'm a bad person?
Well, that's not a problem for two reasons. One is that if you assign the text of some element using the text binding, then it will use the correct HTML DOM API for assigning the text on the element, not the HTML content.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter if there's angle brackets in there. They're just going to come out as literal angle brackets.
Okay.
The second reason why that's not a problem is that if you want to type in malicious script on your own page, that's only going to affect you. Cross-site scripting only becomes a problem if you can make the script run on someone else's computer, not your own. And Knockout is not making it any easier for that to happen. So XSS is really a server-side issue, that the server is emitting some markup to someone and it's bad markup, and that person doesn't want that bad markup.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes when one plays with samples and applications like this and they start poking around, they see the easy examples.
Yeah.
Like hello world and stuff. And then you start getting into detailed examples. You wonder if that open source project is going to fall down. Because everyone always feels like their project, their business rule, their thing is special.
Yeah.
You know, but no. But at my company, right? Everyone has 12 phone numbers.
Yeah.
When you, and there's a number of things that I think that people who are just now getting into JavaScript and Ajax look at as being like virtually impossible. Like you've got this really great example here of a context editor where a contact can have any number of phone numbers.
Yeah.
When things are kind of one to many and very open-ended.
Yep.
How does Knockout handle things like that? And then when I'm done, how do I get that data back to the server side?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't worry too much that people are going to come up with use cases that are too difficult for Knockout, because Knockout is really just yet another implementation of the MVVM pattern, which is quite well established. And I didn't invent that. I'm confident that that's used in, you know, very demanding situations.
Mm-hmm. So you're basically saying that it's so extensible and so basic, and that it is the pattern itself that would break down, not the library implementation of it.
Yeah, I don't think there's a problem with the pattern. It's a very straightforward kind of concept, and I've not been able to think of a situation in which it didn't apply.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I do get a lot of support questions from people saying, I'm trying to do this kind of thing and I'm basing it on this example of yours, and I've got this extra requirement and I can't figure out how to do it. And whenever that happens, my response is always, well, let's think about how you model that in your view model.
Mm-hmm.
And the person is often thinking something like, oh, I'm not thinking about a view model. I'm thinking about running some jQuery events on that element and then directly manipulating the DOM. And I'm getting confused. And I always have to say, look, you're going to have to stop thinking about directly manipulating the DOM in an ad hoc kind of uncontrolled fashion. Because if you do that, it's not in sync with your view model anymore. And then you don't really have any clear idea of what your data is or where your behavior is. And so the more people get into thinking in an MVVM way, the simpler it becomes for them. But it is quite a leap if you are used to a more sort of ad hoc way of building a UI.
I see. So what I'm hearing you say, calling back to the discussion we had earlier about making your own state system, is that if you're used to maintaining state and messing around and trying to keep everything in sync, you're going to be going against a system whose very existence is to make sure that everything's in sync.
Exactly. Yes. And if you start duplicating what it does, then, you know, you've kind of lost the benefit of it, because the whole point is that it does that for you.
And I'm noticing also, just occasionally as I move my way through your examples, that there are, you know, little utilities and things that I'm not necessarily familiar with. Value has mutated, remove, array, remove item. Are there some things that you've put in there, some syntactic sugar that makes it a little easier to do these kind of things?
Yeah, there's a bunch of utility methods in there that simplify working with arrays. So they, for example, in JavaScript, there's no straightforward way of removing a particular object from an array. You have to somehow find the index of that object and then run a splice on it. And it's quite difficult to remember how to do that because, you know, IE7 before doesn't even have an index of method. Mm-hmm. And then the syntax for splice is really hard to remember. So, for example, I've just created a remove method that will just literally find and remove an object. And that's really useful in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole bunch of things like that. But that's not really the point of Knockout. That was mainly to make my implementation of it simpler. And it just so happens that those same methods happen to be useful when you're writing your own code as well. But it's not primarily about a system for processing arrays and data structures. Mm-hmm. There are other libraries that are better for that, like underscore.js or prototype.js. That's what they specialize in. And so if you're going to be doing a lot of low-level array manipulation and object graph manipulation, you might want to combine it with one of those.
Do you know of any other, I mean, who's Knockout's competition? Are there any other MVVM patterns like this out there? I mean, I know that there is some discussion of different live data things that Microsoft had put some implementation of some kind of live data syncing out there.
Yeah, there's two other libraries that I think overlap somewhat. One of them is from Microsoft. There's the jQuery data linking proposal, which I think has gone beyond being a proposal now. It's kind of a real jQuery plugin. And that does a part of what Knockout does. It gives you a way of doing a live link between some JavaScript model data and some parts of your HTML. So that's covering a part of it, but it doesn't deal with things like dependency tracking. So if you've got a sophisticated model where property A depends on B, which depends on C, and this is more common than it sounds, you might think, oh, I don't have to compute lots of stuff. But if you just think, oh, even you've just got a selection index, and then from that you want to compute which item in a set as selected, and then somewhere else you want to display a property of the selected item, this is all dependencies of the index of the thing that's selected. And so Knockout handles that in a really straightforward way. I'm not sure exactly what the best way to do that with the Microsoft Data Linking mm-hmm. plugin is. It might have a good way of dealing with that, but, you know, I'm not sure.
Do you think that you would integrate, like if this becomes a jQuery official thing, do you bring that in? I mean, when you're a person out there who is making a library where, like you said, you know, there's some intersections. It's not a clear Knockout JS does this and this, you know, foo JavaScript does the exact same thing, and you guys are like VHS and Betamax.
No, it's not at all. I don't want to reproduce what someone else is doing. If there are two libraries that do the same thing, I'd prefer the better one to win and the other one to go away. And I've no personal interest in maintaining something just for the sake of it. But Knockout is a particular way of following the MVVM pattern and doing the whole automatic declarative bindings with dependency tracking, very much sort of, if you fit into this system, it's going to work really nicely for you. If you don't fit into this system, if you're not willing to do MVVM, then it's not going to work so nicely for you. So I've got a very opinionated framework here that is going to work great if you follow it. Whereas the jQuery data linking tool is a more of a low level thing. And I don't think that specifically guides you to structure your client side code in one particular way rather than another. I don't know. I've not seen any guidance about that.
Cool. Well, I like opinionated. Yeah. I think we can all agree that jQuery has added a lot of opinionated thinking around JSON, and certainly another opinionated JavaScript library is a welcome thing.
Yeah, and I should also just mention at this point, the other one of the two libraries that's quite similar is Backbone.js, you might want to check out. And that is by the guy who created CoffeeScript. I can't remember his name right now, unfortunately, but he's a very smart guy. And he's created this JavaScript library that also links the HTML DOM with a view model. So it's quite similar. But the one of the key differences there is that Backbone.js has a very rich kind of model system. So you're expected to derive your classes from a particular base class inside Backbone.js and then follow very specific conventions about how you load and save that data with your server. So it's kind of all about the model there. And it's got very sort of basic support for then binding that onto your HTML, not as much as Knockout. Whereas Knockout is dealing with very, very rich UI bindings, very declarative, template-oriented, and so on. But Knockout doesn't really have very much opinion about how you're going to load and save data from the server. That's kind of up to you, depending on what server-side platform you're using.
All right, fantastic. Well, thank you, Steve, so much for chatting with us today. Folks can see all of this at knockoutjs.com. And you're now SteveSA@Microsoft.com. Congratulations.
That is right. Thank you very much.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.